You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
This week's Practical Horseman podcast with Boyd Martin is sponsored by Purina Replenimash. Attention, horse owners. Are you looking to help your horse recover with ease after a strenuous workout? Would you like to nourish your horse and their digestive system? If so, try the new Purina Replenimash product. It's much more than a mash. Replenimash promotes hydration, replenishes electrolytes, and supports gastric comfort. Put Purina's research to the test. Stop into your local Purina retailer and grab a bag of Purina Replenimash product.
You know, if you look at the top riders, it's unusual that their best buddy is another top rider. You know, it's just the way it is. When I say that, I don't want to paint a picture of hostility. Like, everyone's friendly and that, but they definitely have their own programs. And then it's a remarkable change. And you know, you get to these team competitions, and all of a sudden you're all living together, and all the grooms are working together. And you know, you've got in the training camps, you've only got one or two horses to ride all day, and so you're playing tennis together or you're going to gym together. And then at the competitions, you're absolutely cheering and rooting for each other like there's no tomorrow, you know. And so it's a really, really, it's cool, actually. It's you know, once every 2 years, you just hope like anything that these person that you've desperately been trying to beat at every other show goes as well as they're ever going to go. So it's a cool experience.
Welcome to the Practical Horseman podcast, featuring conversations with respected riders, industry leaders, and horse care experts. The show is co-hosted by Practical Horseman editors, and our goal is to inform, educate, and inspire. I'm Julia Boutenhouse, and this week's episode is with a man who needs little introduction, the one and only Boyd Martin. You'd be hard-pressed to find an eventing fan who doesn't know who Boyd Martin is. Not only is he known for his outstanding eventing success, but also for his wit, humor, and charismatic personality. Back in 2007, Boyd moved from Australia to the United States in pursuit of his international eventing dreams. Then, in 2009, he became an American citizen. Boyd has since represented the United States at 3 Olympic Games, 3 World Championships, and 2 Pan American Games. He's also had competitive success at every 5-star across the globe, including 2 wins, Adelaide in 2003 and Maryland in 2021. In addition, he's been named the United States Eventing Association's Rider of the Year on 7 occasions. All that to say that Boyd is one of the world's leading event riders. He's currently ranked 3rd on the FEI Eventing World Athlete Rankings list. Competitive success aside, Boyd and his wife, international dressage rider Silva Martin, own and operate Windura USA in Cochranville, Pennsylvania. They have 3 sons, 8-year-old Knox, 5-year-old Leo, and the newest member of the Martin family, Koa, was welcomed in September 2023. The last time we had Boyd on the Practical Horseman podcast was in 2019. So on this episode, Boyd shares a glimpse at what has happened in his life over the past 5 years. He also reflects on his eventing journey over the last 2 decades, chats about his family and his business, and discusses what team dynamics look like behind the scenes.
Alrighty, so today I have Boyd Martin. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me on the podcast.
Thanks, Julia. Yeah, it's good to be on.
So you spoke with us a few years ago, I think it was back in 2019, and it's been quite some time, so that our listeners can get reacquainted with you, because a lot of things can happen in 4 or 5 years it's been. Let's just start with what has happened in your life in the last 4 or 5 years. I know that's a pretty broad question, but you know, so much change, so much growth in your career. What's been going on with you the past 4 years or so?
It's a good question. I mean, I often haven't really paused to think about it. I mean, it to be quite honest, it's the same old thing, which is the thing that I love, which is finding event horses, training them, competing them, taking them up the levels, and trying to get them to the 5-star level. I suppose in the last 5 years, my life's probably got more and more complicated. In a good way, I think. I've had some kids, which has definitely thrown a spanner in the works. And then I think, with success becomes lots of distractions, and you get pulled in every different direction. And, it's been challenging. Silver and I bought a farm, I think, in 2010. So each year we're trying to make that bigger and better, and, trying to keep firing with all the horses that we've got, and trying to raise our children well. And it's been fun. It's a lot of work. It's an unbelievable amount of work, but I'm still loving it, and I feel like I'm sort of halfway through my career, so I've got a lot to look forward to still.
Yeah, and you just welcomed your third. Congratulations, by the way. How is the baby doing, and how's Silva?
They're good. I mean, to be quite honest, I haven't seen him for 2 months. I'm down in Aiken, South Carolina at the moment, and I've been down here all January and February, and Silver and the three boys have been in Pennsylvania. But the new baby's good. He's happy and healthy. You forget how small these newborns are, and our oldest kid is 8, and then we've got a 5-year-old and now a 4-month-year-old. So we've sort of got an assortment of boys tearing the house apart. So it's good fun. We're very fortunate. We sort of live where we work. So, Silver being a dressage rider and me doing the eventing, and having a family home at the farm, and then we've also sort of got a full-time nanny that sort of runs the show and keeps an eye on things so Silver can get back to her riding and coaching and whatnot. And it's organized chaos, Julia. Organized chaos.
I mean, I think we all love seeing the videos of the boys on social media. They look like quite a rowdy crew. They look like they could be a handful, huh?
Yeah, I mean, they're fun. I mean, it sort of reminds me of my life years and years ago in Australia, where you're young and you don't have anything to worry about, and you love sport, and it's a wonderful moment in your life. Unfortunately, as you get older, you have more and more responsibilities and people to answer to. But it's a great time in their life. The oldest one, Knox, is sort of starting to play competitive sport. So my life's changed a bit, I suppose, in the last 5 years, where, the end of my day riding, which is usually about 5 o'clock, I take Knox or Leo to their ice hockey training or their football training. And, again, it reminds me of my younger days with my dad back in Australia. So it's funny how little things remind you of, what seems like happened a lifetime ago.
Yeah, for sure. And they have caught the riding bug, it looks like, at least.
Yeah, I mean, they're into all sports, to be honest. I mean, obviously we'd love for them to ride, but I think Silver and I don't want to sort of push them into horses. I think when they're young, they should be experiencing all sports, and horses are one of them, and we don't really take them to the competitions, I think they obviously know what we do for a job, but I think dragging them and making them stay all weekend at horse shows they'd get sick and sour of it pretty quick. So Leo at the moment's got the horse bug. He's sort of riding nearly every day, and he's got this pony, and he's figured out that he can basically go anywhere on the farm he wants, and bareback, and he rode us through the house the other day, and he's so it's great fun. It's great fun, and we'll see if they take on horses. If they don't, that'd be fine as long as they do something, you know, do something that's other than sitting around the house watching TV. I think that's my only request in their sporting endeavors.
And so since the last time we spoke, you've been to another Olympic Games. What was that Olympics like? And now looking forward to the 2024 Olympics, do you have those on your mind?
Yeah, I mean, the Tokyo Olympics were very unique. Mm-hmm. You know, to go to an Olympic Games where there was no spectators was, it was kind of cool actually looking back on it to think back to this amazing lifelong goal and no one was watching. It was very peculiar and weird. It was, I sort of left there with mixed feelings. I had a sester leg and didn't quite nail it. We did pretty good, but, when you go to those big championships, you just anything less than a personal best is usually a disappointment. So, and then looking forward, I think obviously Paris is this year, and I try not to overthink it or obviously it's a huge talking point and that, but to me, to go to the Olympics is more about having an in-form horse that's healthy and performing well in April and May, and I think that's my goal at the moment, is making sure that the group of horses I have are going really, really well. They're building their fitness up. They're good and healthy and strong. And come Kentucky this year, try and really make sure that we deliver a phenomenal performance. And usually the week after Kentucky, and you start thinking about the Olympics. I think if you start agonizing over it now, you're missing the critical part, which is the preparation and the building and the focus towards getting selected. So
yeah, looking at the spring season, you have a nice lineup of horses right now. You of course have Thomas, who you mentioned, and then you have Fetterman B, Bruno, Luke 140, Contessa, to name a few of like your top horses right now. And then of course you have some younger ones. Who are you thinking about for something like Kentucky at the 5-star?
Well, it's a tricky one. At the Olympic Games is an unusual date. It's in the middle of July, which mm-hmm. is actually not that long after Kentucky 5-star. So one of our challenges at the moment is trying to figure out whether the more older and seasoned champion horses should just do the 4-star short at Kentucky, or if they should do the 5-star long at Kentucky, or the 5-star mm-hmm. long at Badminton. So
right.
I'm in a wonderful position at the moment. I've got sort of four or five 4-star, 5-star horses. So, we're still in the stages of planning of what where to take them and what to do with them. So I think the training at the moment is still the same for all of them, but then in the next couple of weeks we're gonna have to start really galloping them and getting them fit. So we've got to have a clear game plan after these sort of early preliminary events.
And that was actually going to be my next question. You have, such a great string of horses who are so fit and just so successful at their jobs. What do you do to keep them fit and not only fit, but happy competing at such a high level of the sport?
Well, as they get older, I find that you drill them less and less. So the two older horses in my barn at the moment would be Sester Leg and On Cue. And, they've been, this is Thomas's seventh year at 5-star. So it's incredible. So, basically we do less, they have, they still do the same amount of fitness work as usual, but then they do less dressage days, they do more hacking days and recovery days. And then the greener ones coming through like Commando or Fetterman B or Lulu, they still have to improve a lot especially in the dressage. So they get they've sort of, they don't get too many easy days just because they still haven't reached their pinnacle. So it's a, it's each horse is an individual. I feel like, you know, some are more thoroughbredy, some are more warm-bloody, some you've got to watch their soundness. It's a real art of sort of, you know, making sure that you do enough to have them prepare, but not doing too much that they're stiff, sour and sore, you know, and it's sort of a balancing act. And I think consistency is important. And just, you know, I've been lucky enough, I've been riding five stars since I've been 19 years old. So I've, you know, I feel like I've got a really good understanding of what it takes to get them there and make sure that they're fit and they're sound and they're happy and they're performing well. And, you know, how hard to push them at the lead up events. And so each horse is an individual. I think it's important that, you know, when you're doing your training schedule and whatnot, is that you're really thinking of what each horse needs on the day.
And what about you? You have quite the fitness regimen, I understand.
Yeah, I mean, I started getting hurt a lot about 5 years ago. I just kept on getting injured over and over and over again. It was a little bit of bad luck, but it was also just a little bit of, you know, I just wasn't strong and healthy. So, you know, I had so many surgeries. I tore my adductor muscle four times and had hip surgery. It broke my pelvis, my leg, my arm, my wrist. And, you know, and so basically I had to make some changes. You know, and part of it was starting to be a little more selective of the riding top horses and not riding so many ones that I fall off. And then, you know, trying to see if I could get a better strength and core strength and balance and, you know, everything, diet, sleep, really tried to focus myself of becoming a bit more of an athlete, just because I think as you get older, you're not Superman anymore. For so many years I could stay out all night partying and drinking and just be bulletproof, and then eventually you get old and you know, my lifestyle's changed 100%, which I think's a good thing. It might sound boring, but I'm you know, I'm in bed early, I wake up early, I do physiotherapy, I do yoga, I do ice baths, I you know, I train like a demon, and you know, and then you know, my main focus is my family and the horses, you know. So it's a, you know, it's a combination of getting older, and then also having this reality check. If I want to be as good as I can be, am I doing absolutely everything to make sure that I can perform the way I want, you know? And that's, you know, that's a hard conversation to have with yourself sometimes, because it's, you know, the reality is you might be overweight, or you might be unflexible, or you might lose a little bit of your self-discipline or your work ethic, or, you know, to be very good for decades and decades and decades, you have to stay unbelievably hungry and disciplined and obsessed with trying to be the best. And that, it's uncomfortable sometimes. But there's, you can't live a normal life and expect to be a champion. So I sort of, you know, it sounds a bit compulsive or obsessive, but you know, I've got a window here of next 10 or 15 years where I could really have a good crack at this. So just trying to do everything I can to make sure I'm in there and not regret it, wishing that I could have done more later on.
And what about your guru, Ruby? Do you work with him anymore?
Yeah, Ruby. Yeah, no, he's a good guy. He lives around the corner from me. So he's an interesting guy. I mean, he's lived so many different lives, and he's been just a good friend. He sort of owns and rides dressage horses, and then he jets around the world. He's a security guard for a lot of celebrities. He's also he also does a lot of body work of stretching and breathing techniques, He helps Philip Dutton out a lot too, and he's just a good dude to have around. Actually, he's I'd suppose you call him my wellness coach and a good friend. But he's a good guy. He's a master at many trades. So he's a person that sort of come into our life and helped me on all different things.
Yeah, we spoke to him a couple of years ago after Kentucky, or at Kentucky, I should say. He is a really wonderful guy.
Yeah. No, he's a top fella.
And, you know, along with the physical fitness of it is also the mental fitness. You know, when we have hard days as riders, especially because this can be such an unpredictable sport with horses, you know, how do you keep your mental strength? How do you, you know, when you have a bad day, you know, put that behind you and keep going in a positive mindset?
I think, you know, I've been at this sport for a long, long time. So, I mean, it's just unbelievable highs and followed by absolute bottomful lows, you know. And I think the key is when things are going well, don't get too high. And when things aren't going well, don't get too low, you know. And, I don't think there's any magic out there. I mean, I truly love the process of training the horses and the day-to-day work, the camaraderie that I have with the staff. And, you know, I've sort of been knocked down over and over and over again. It's just it's sort of part of the life we've chosen. And it's still tough, though, when a horse gets injured or you come up short at an important competition. But, I mean, really, if you really look at what we do for a job, it's people would do anything to do what we do every day. So it's sort of I don't know, you talk about mental toughness, I just think it's just a part of life and pushing on, and also, you know, having the emotion control over your emotions, where you can just handle it and know that the sun comes up the next day and there's a lot of other things to look forward to. But it's you know, it's hard and it's tough, but, you know, so is it. Everyone in the world's got things that they struggle with and they find it hard. So it's no use whinging and whining about what we do.
Mm-hmm. And when you're at a big competition, say something like the Olympics, actually, I guess, let me first ask, do you get nervous? You know, some people deal with it and some people don't. Do you get nervous?
Of course I get nervous, yeah. I think and if you don't get nervous, it's not healthy. I mean, I think nerves is things that sort of keep you on edge and keep you focused and concentrating on all the little details. And it's also the emotion or the feeling that normal people that sit on a couch and eat popcorn and stare at the TV all day never get nervous, you know. And so it's also a feeling of privilege because you've put yourself in this nerve-wracking moment, and that's you know, I think that you should learn to enjoy the moment of being nervous and unsure and terrified and scared. And it's a you know, I think that's sort of one of the joys in the sport.
And what I was going to ask before I started tripping over my words there was when you do get nervous, what helps you work through those nerves so then you can, you know, perform as best you can?
I think a good question. I mean, number one, I've been doing this for so long that I feel like I'm just trained to just roll through this process, you know. And I think the one comforting thing that I always have is this thought in the back of my mind that knowing that I'm prepared, you know, that I've done the work, I've trained hard, I've worked hard, I've done everything I can to get myself in a position where I can pull this off and be successful, and accepting this idea that it is what it is and let the chips will fall where they fall, you know, and not get too worried about the actual end result, you know, and trying to stay in the moment a little bit. If it's pointless worrying about what place you're going to finish or It's more, you know, concentrating on in the moment, what's in the next 5 minutes of your life, what can you do to make that as good as you can, you know? And I think the true champions seem to handle nerves the best, you know, where they, you know, they don't let it consume them. They don't, it makes them better. It makes them stronger. It doesn't sort of fizzle them out and freak them out and wipe them out sort of thing. So I think I've been a competitor for the bulk of my life now, and I've sort of learnt that it's my advantage now of when, you know, it's easy to talk a big game months out, weeks out, but then when it's crunch time, that's when you see the true competitors, how they handle themselves.
And do you have any kind of like a routine or a superstition that you do before you compete that maybe could settle these nerves, or just something that, you know, gives you a little bit of comfort before?
Yeah, I mean, I think I go through a, you know, to get myself started every day. I mean, I go through a series of stretches and, you know, and I think that sometimes just puts myself into a little bit of a Zen mode. And, you know, I feel like I've sort of got this a bit of a routine of, you know, when it comes down to the competition of, you know, the last couple of hours of sort of, I go a little bit quiet and sort of keep to myself a little bit and have a good plan of what I want to do with the horses. And then, you know, when things get really tight, you know, I've sort of experienced breathing techniques and, you know, there's a series of things that sort of calm me down and keep me focused. But it's hard too when, you know, when you sort of, you've got family around, you've got sponsors and owners and, you know, like you're still trying to, you know, pretend that you're the, you know, happy, nice guy, where inside you're really trying to sort of stay to yourself. So I think the people around you is important. And I think that the people around you have got to understand that there's time where you just got to back away and stay away and give the rider space and let them do their thing, sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, totally. And it's interesting because you know, a lot of riders I talk to, they say they have similar sentiments, but you know, others say the opposite. So I think it's always interesting to hear from riders the different kind of mindsets and different spaces that they have to put themselves in, you know, to help them and give them that piece of comfort. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So you've been, you've been at this sport for quite some time, since you were, like you said, doing five stars since you were 19 years old. If you could look back at that kid in Australia, you know, all those years ago, could you have predicted that you'd be where you are today?
Good question. I mean, I think deep down, yeah, I mean, I had a tremendous amount of self-belief from a young age, you know, and it was interesting, actually, and I always... You know, I remember when I was young in Australia that I really thought I was could be good, you know, and I'm sure young American riders feel like this all the time, where you just feel like you're never getting noticed and people don't look at you as a future champion rider, and it takes time. And I always remind myself that when now that I'm established and whatever, you look at up and coming American riders and you know they're working hard and they're training hard and they're pushing themselves, and sometimes they feel like they're not getting recognized, or I don't know, so I felt like that a little bit, you know. And and I was lucky. I had my parents were both professional sports people in their heyday, so they, you know, I left school at 17 and didn't even consider going to university or college. I just became a working pupil and moved into a bunkhouse with 14 other 17-year-olds in Lochinvar with Heath Ryan. And so I was right from day one in the premier place to become a champion, you know, and that was the thing. And, just going back to your question is, you know, I always had a I was always very optimistic and, you know, probably to a point, a fault where, you know, I just had self-belief and self-confidence, and I had a lot of just tough athletic thoroughbreds that would jump the jumps or usually jump the jumps. And you know, looking back on it, I really didn't know what I was doing. And but sometimes you don't know what you don't know, which is sometimes is a good thing. I think when I first came to America, I came to America on a cargo plane with Yin Yang Yo in 2006, and to compete at Kentucky. And I just come over for that one event, and I remember getting here and looking around and thinking, this is what I've been sort of dreaming of. This is the place for me. It was 10, let's see, yeah, it was 10 years of even more of hard grinding work in Australia, and not very, it wasn't very glamorous. It was, you know, driving all night and sleeping in the back of your trailer and buying horses for $500 and, there wasn't, you're pretty broke the whole time. Luckily the mentor that I had with Heath Ryan is he just trained you to be an unbelievable hard worker, and his big message was, if you keep working as hard as you can, you're going to make it. And he was sort of true. It was true, you know, that if you want it bad enough and you keep pushing yourself and you keep working and you don't take days off, and you know, it was almost a bit of a cult where I was, that would result in you sort of making it. And he was right.
And now all these years later, I mean, you're one of the, you're top three in the world right now, currently. And you've, you know, represented the United States for many years. You've been on so many teams, just so many amazing successes. If you think you could pinpoint where you got your quote unquote big break in your career, what would you say it was? Or like that moment where you thought, you know, here I am, you know, I've made it.
I think looking back, I've had like five or six of those moments a bit, you know, like, mm-hmm. So when I was 13 years old, my parents bought me an off the track thoroughbred called Flying Doctor. And we didn't have any idea about horses, and I fell off him when I tried him, and he didn't run away, so we bought him, and that was my pony club horse. And then somehow a couple of years later I went around at my first long format five star, you know, and it was $1,200, and so that horse right there, like, that sort of catapulted me to, oh my god, you know, this is doable. And that was a turning point. Then probably 3 or 4 years later, I won a five-star long in 2003 with a horse called True Blue Tuzak. I think that was the one that sort of put me on the map. It was the year before the Olympics, and, you know, I was a bit unheard of, and I went for broke at this competition at Adelaide and won it. So that was a big thing. And then I think coming to America and with another thoroughbred called Yin Yang Yo, and that was the coming over here, and that horse sort of introduced me to this country. And then probably a couple of years later, another thoroughbred, I had a lot of thoroughbreds, Neville Bardos, who, you know, I got so close to so many Australian teams so many times, and then Neville Bardos did really well at Fairhill in Kentucky, and I got on the World Equestrian Games team, and I finished 10th, the best American rider that. And I think that was the moment that got me started in America, just because, you know, I changed my nationality and I sort of proved myself there. And I know, looking forward, obviously all the Olympics are big, and I think for me personally, winning Maryland five-star on cue was a It was, personally, it was just a took, you know, it was took 18 years before I won one in 2003, and then I won another one in whatever year that was, 20, I can't remember, 21 or something. So 22, no, 21. So I don't know. I've just been blessed also with, you know, champion horses, and I think that, you know, now it's, now I'm very, very lucky where it's taken decades to get to this place, but there, now we're getting some really top, top caliber horses coming to the stable, thanks to a huge support of great owners. And so this is why I think I'm, this next, you know, this next couple of years is going to be pretty, pretty exciting, just because the quality of horses coming my way now are at a different league. So.
And how is Miss Q doing? She, you know, I mean, that was a really big win, especially for the United States, because I think it had been, what, 15 years or something crazy like that since the United States won a 5-star before you and Q did that at Maryland?
Yeah, she's good. I mean, she's getting old now. I just got off her, actually, just before we had this call. So I'm going to try and I think she's going to head towards Kentucky 5-star. So she did Burley last year, which was pretty good. Mm-hmm. So we'll just see if we can get, probably this will be her last year, and we'll give it a good crack, and then she'll probably have some more children.
Yeah, I was going to say, she has a couple of babies out there already, right?
Yeah, we've got a barbecue, we've got Rubik's Cube, we've got Cucumber, there's a few of them out there. So.
Oh, they're all Q-themed, I gotcha. Very yeah. Cute. if you're okay with that, I'd really like to ask you about some a little bit more personal stuff about your team experience with USA. You know, just kind of interested in what the team looks like, you know, internally with you guys. I know, obviously, you know, at different events, the teams change and people come and go, and it could be different every single time. But what does the camaraderie look like between you guys, you know, when you're competing?
Yeah, it's a weird... it's a weird dynamic because, you know, we're so, you know, especially the riders in America, they're so busy that you sort of pass by each other at big competitions. You know, some of the top riders live in California, some of them live in Florida, some of them live in Pennsylvania, and you sort of bump into each other. But you also, especially at these big important competitions, there's quite a lot of rivalry and competitiveness between each other, you know, and there's not many riders that are best friends, to be quite frank. I mean, I've got an unusual friendship with Philip Dutton, just because he's sort of my, I don't know, but he was sort of my boss or a father figure, you know, like, so we're probably best of friends. But, you know, if you look at the top riders, there's, it's unusual that they're best buddy is another top rider, you know, it's just the way it is. But when I say that, I don't want to paint a picture of hostility, like everyone's friendly and that, but they definitely have their own programs. And then it's a remarkable change, and you know, you get to these team competitions, and all of a sudden you're all living together, and all the grooms are working together, and you know, you've got in the training camps, you've only got one or two horses to ride all day. And so you're playing tennis together, or you're going to gym together. And then at the competitions, you're absolutely cheering and rooting for each other like there's no tomorrow, you know. And so it's a really, really, it's cool, actually. It's, you know, once every 2 years, you just hope, like anything, that this person that you've desperately been trying to beat at every other show goes as well as they're ever going to go. So it's a cool experience. The owners, the staff, the USA's got great staff. You know, they've changed it around a little bit now, where we've got our own personal coaches, but then the sort of core group is the same, with the sort of chef to keep and the vet, and you know, that crowd is usually the same, and they're all good people, and they're, you know, they're not doing it to get rich, they're doing it because they want to see America or these riders or these horses perform. And it's usually like, even the blacksmith and the vet, I mean, the they lose money doing the Olympics, you know, like it's they're completely doing it out of the such an unselfish reason. So
I think it's amazing in horse sport how often that happens. It's hard to make money in this sport, and people are just, you know, so dedicated to it, and the horses and their friends, that, you know, it's worth it. It's worth it to do it.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's a unique experience. And, you know, some of my best memories have been at these big championships. You know, it's amazing where horses take you in life.
Just the last couple of questions here to wrap up. Sticking with the team theme, you know, when you guys are training, you of course train individually. Like you said, you guys are kind of all over the country. And so when you're training at home, for you personally in your training, do you have coaches kind of in each specialty, like dressage, show jumping, you know, and then cross country, that you work with to keep you, you know, on your top of your game in each of those disciplines? Or do you have one coach? Like, what does that look like for you?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the sport's getting so specialized now that you need, you know, pure jumping coaches. And so for me, obviously my wife's a Grand Prix dressage rider, but then, you know, I also bring in Bettina Hoy from Germany. She's coaching me tomorrow, actually. So she's awesome. And the good thing with dressage is she can train me virtually from Germany, you know, and we sometimes do that a couple of times a week where she's coaching me and she's sitting in a lounge room in Germany and I'm riding in Pennsylvania. It's cool. And then in the show jumping, Peter Wild is just unbelievable. He's brilliant. You know, Bettina and him, like they're unbelievable. And then for the cross country and sort of overall coach would be Eric Devander. I think Eric's a master at cross country riding, but then he also is very, very good on the dressage and jumping, and he's great at the competitions too. So I really appreciate him. And then, you know, you got a team outside of that where I've got my own physios and my own personal trainers, and then my blacksmiths and my vets and the chiropractors, and then the staff at home, like my head groom, Steph, is an incredibly important part of the plan. And it's a traveling circus.
And then the chef de keep of the team, Bobby. Does he encourage this with you guys kind of bringing in each of you your own coaches to work with to stay on the top of your game?
Yeah, Bobby's good. He's, you know, he sort of oversees the whole thing. And, you know, I think he's a great coach himself and knows his stuff. And, you know, he was a top competitor himself. So he comes from a load of experience as well. So, I check in with him with where I'm at, and he talks to my coaches, and, you know, he turned up the other day and watched all our jumping sessions. And, I think he's good. I think he leaves everyone to do their own thing as long as he thinks it's heading the right direction. And if it's not, then I think he'd step in. But there's probably 10 riders in America that are, I think, world class, you know, that are top notch. And they're pretty, if you really had a close look at their operation, it's pretty streamlined. You know, they've got unbelievable owners, top horses, mega coaches, they're athletes themselves, they're at unbelievable training facilities. Like, there's not many stones left unturned with that sort of top group of riders in America.
And just last question here, what is next for you? Like, what's on your calendar?
Yeah, I mean, we're busy at the moment. We've got lots of horses coming through, and I just bought a couple of new ones. So where I am in Pennsylvania is phenomenal for getting horses fit with the gallop track and everything like that. So that's ideal. And then, we're basically competing every weekend. eventing or some jumping shows or some dressage shows. It's busy time of the year. And by saying that, it's hard work, but it's I'm fired up at the moment because we've got, you know, lots and lots of top horses and
yeah,
a great group of staff, some awesome owners. You know, it's not really work, even though you're working all day, but it's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. Which horses can we expect to see out this spring?
All of them. We'll see. I'll probably take something to Badminton, probably three or four to Kentucky, and see how it all plans out. One thing I know with horses is you have a wonderful game plan, and you often have to sort of change it or plan for something different. So, you know, I've got plan A and then I've got plan B and I've also got plan C. So we'll see how it goes, you know, it's tricky.
Yeah, that's the name of the game. I feel like you make a plan and then the universe laughs at you.
So. Yeah. Simple as that, Julia.
Thank you very, very much again for taking the time to speak with me.
All right, mate. Well, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode with Boyd Martin. You can subscribe to the Practical Horseman podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. While you're there, please rate and review the show. Also, tune into our mini-sode series, The FOD Pod, where you'll hear audio lessons from our favorite Equestrian Plus clips. When you tune into The FOD Pod, listen closely for a promo code for 15% off your Equestrian Plus subscription. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode. I'm Julia Boutenhouse, and you've been listening to The Practical Horseman Podcast.